Hello and welcome back to another episode of The Damage Report. I am John Iderola. We're still under quarantine, and thankfully my video feed is working because just mere minutes before going live, my camera stopped working. But everything seems okay, so hopefully we'll avoid some sort of massive tech meltdown of the sort that Elon Musk has on Twitter every couple days. But anyway, joining us to talk about Elon Musk and more for the first time under lockdown, we've got Dan Evans, video producer and co-host of the Audio Face podcast and former producer at TYT. Dan, welcome back to the Damage Report.
They always come crawling back, John. They always come crawling back.
They do. They do. Maybe Sophie will come back someday. But anyway, people have been watching for a long time are probably familiar with this because you've been on the show before, but it was quite a while ago. You worked with TYT for several years in two different stints. I'm trying to think of which number producer you were for the show, but like one or two?
I was one of the founding producers, one or two.
Founding producers.
Basically, yeah, you were getting it launched when we launched on Live Linear, and Brett started working on it, and that was around the time I graduated from college and was able to come down and work on it. So, yeah, it's part of the gang's all back together.
Yeah, yeah, we're getting the band back together. Yeah, so you were so early in. I don't know for sure if you were there, but you were basically there when, many people don't know this, we did this show for literally a couple of months with no one seeing it because it wasn't going out anywhere.
So you were
producing and doing the show.
You often tell the story, John. I wasn't producing it back then, but I was still like involved in the TYT sphere. Mm. So I was like one of three people who were watching it because we were testing the live linear feed.
Yes.
And like at different times we're supposed to quality control it. And so I was like, hey, this is a hella good show. That's kind of why I was like hitting you up, and I was like, yo, can I work on this show? This is really good. And so
Thank you.
I'm happy. It's awesome to see it grow. It's even though I've moved on to other pastures, I watch the show mostly every day I can. Shout out to my bosses watching in meetings. And I'm ready to get started with news.
Okay. Well, we're almost there. Okay. Pump the brakes, buddy. But no, we're very glad to have you here to add your perspective, the perspective of, as someone noted in the chat, another clean shaven lefty, because there's so few left these days. And the perspective of someone who we literally had to get stop playing Animal Crossing right before the show started. So an idea, okay? But anyway, you're gonna give us that perspective, and we couldn't be more excited. There you go. I'm sure you have a gorgeous island. But anyway,
it's up and coming.
It's up and coming. Okay, mine has been rotting, laying fallow for months. But anyway, for those of you who are already here, feel free to hit the like button and share the stream. You can send in comments. We're on both YouTube and Twitch right now. You can send us tweets at hashtag TDRLive, and you can also send in super chats, and we'll be responding to those as we go on. We've got a million stories to get to, so Dan, why don't we jump into it? It is becoming more and more obvious as cases in this pandemic go up and hospitalizations go up and deaths are starting to go up again, that we need to do something serious. But this is America, so we're not going to. So short of doing something serious, we could wear masks maybe. But unfortunately, many of our elected representatives not only don't think that we need to press for people to do that, but in fact are doing what they can to stop other leaders from making it happen. And here we're talking about Georgia Governor Brian Kemp. The pandemic and Brian Kemp, two things that should not be combined, and unfortunately they have been. He said yesterday, through an executive order, that he was suspending all local government mask mandates despite the rise in coronavirus cases and hospitalizations in his state. So understand exactly what this means. Under the executive order, the Republican governor extended the state's public emergency and said face coverings are strongly encouraged, that's the good news, but not required, and Kemp's executive order voids mask mandates imposed by local governments as cases are going up. In the state, you've already lost 3,000 lives, by the way. So in the past, the executive orders he'd been putting out had been saying that local ordinances can't be more stringent than the state ordinances, sort of a general principle. In this case, it's specifically saying, though, you cannot at the county or city level mandate mask wearing. We will not allow it.
Yeah, that's just insane. you look at, I mean, with the coronavirus cases, I think we always have to take a global kind of perspective to this. Most other countries have dealt with this. You look at Japan, where, by the way, mask wearing was already very much in the culture because when there are flu seasons, people are living very close together, and just it's very much being polite to make sure you don't spread the disease to other people. And if multiple people participate in this thing, then it does a better social good. But Americans just don't do broader social goods.
Not most of us.
So, like, yeah, we've taken this perspective to down to not just some like cranks on the internet who are like cranks around at gas stations or diners who are just like refusing to not wear masks, but like it's actually coming down to the people who are legislating, who are now deciding to legislate ignorance. And that's like, again, when you take a kind of global, broader perspective at different ways of handling the coronavirus, yeah, a lot of countries have really messed up in handling the coronavirus, and a lot of countries have done insanely well. But I think there have been very few states on like an America, United States level or anything like that, where you're actively doing something that's preventing what might like help people. It's going against the science so broadly. I think it's just absurd.
Yeah, 100%. And the way that it's absurd is so similar to the absurdity that we've been experiencing on a daily basis that I really do feel like I'm living out a Groundhog Day or Palm Springs sort of situation. Like Kemp specifically has been so ignorant, so wrong during this pandemic. He's still doing it? That even though, like, you can look at case counts in Georgia gradually going up. This is a couple of weeks now. His big move is to stop other politicians from making the decision that masks should be mandated. And understand that this is the same Brian Kemp who back in early April admitted that he had just learned that asymptomatic people can spread coronavirus. So maybe not necessarily the person with the intellectual curiosity, intellectual grounding to be making these sorts of decisions, and not just decisions. This isn't just, I'm not going to mandate it. It's none of you can mandate it. So if Atlanta wants to do something more serious, or Savannah has an issue with it, and the mayors of both do, they're both speaking out against this, they can go screw themselves, according to Brian Kemp. There's nothing they can do. They have to risk the lives of their citizens. It's
Yeah,
madness.
I like the way you frame that, John, honestly, because the argument's going to be from the Republican side that's just literally only taking a political perspective and kowtowing to Trump on this, that Brian Kemp is protecting rights and protecting freedoms. Well, on even that like sort of hardcore libertarian basis and that logic, wouldn't it almost kind of make sense that you are, as the governor, preventing the freedoms of these states, of these cities and local municipalities from protecting themselves and protecting their people? If like a kind of maybe a science leaning rural, as far as like further away from the big cities in Georgia, want to get together and say, hey, if you're passing through this town, we're going to wear masks, we're going to be smart about it because we don't want our local infrastructure to be really hit with this thing. We can't deal with what New York did. Now Brian Kemp is preventing that. That seems like an overreach of government. I don't see any conservatives who are taking that line because, as we've established since like 2017 at this point, they're only going to side with the team, and the team is Trump, and they thought they could hitch their wagon to that towards re-election, and that wagon's looking kind of wobbly right now.
And you're 100% right in terms of the team. If Trump said, you know what, I've been thinking about it, and I'm really strong on masks, so strong, big masks, love them, they should all be mandated. Like, what do you think Brian Kemp would be like? No, I'm standing on principle, no mandates. No, he would flip immediately over. And so I think if we accept that, then the onus is to some extent on Trump to take this more seriously. If all of these Republican state and local officials are 100% deferential to his will, if his will is in the direction of assisting the virus and continuing to spread, then that's going to be really bad for a lot of Americans. So I'm glad that we're focusing on Brian Kemp. And really fast, let me mention, I know that some people, even fans of the show, might be starting to get a little bit frustrated with the fact that we talk about masks all the time. Every show, we lead off a lot of shows with it, and I understand if it gets repetitive. I do. But while I am under no illusions about the power of this show to, in any significant way, influence the national discourse, if we have the ability to reach almost anyone and get them to take masks more seriously, I am going to go in that direction, even if it means crowding out a little bit of other news. We're still deep in the pandemic. I feel comfortable with this decision. I apologize if it bores you. Not you, Dan. You like, have to talk about it.
No, I am happy to talk to you about masks or virtually anything else, John. Thank you. No, I think even if you are a viewer who is tired of hearing about masks or a certain topic, then maybe it's on to you to say, okay, if you feel like you become an expert based on watching the very fine shows like The Damage Report on hearing about these topics, then go talk to other people. Take that next step. And make sure that, like, you're able to correct people in a respectful way, in a civil way, but make sure you're able to talk to people who maybe aren't on your side of things, or start a conversation, or make sure it's, don't even come from it like a, you should do this. Just maybe come from it as a, I care about your health and want to make sure you're properly informed kind of way. Like, if that is the next step that you need to take, then maybe that's on to you to do that.
I think that that's a very, very healthy way to take that. You remember Ronnie Jackson, former doctor to the stars, or at least one of them, Donald Trump? He was on Fox News recently, and here's what he had to say in response to Texas starting to push more people to wear masks.
We do not want to shut down business or Texas again. We cannot have that. What we can do, however, we can use these practices like what you just said, and that is people can wear masks. We can use these other strategies to slow the spread while we are awaiting the time when we do have these vaccines.
And doctor, one of the things that Dr. Redfield said yesterday, he's the director of the CDC, he said that if all Americans wore a mask, they could control the coronavirus in 1 to 2 months.
Well, I think wearing a mask is a personal choice, and I don't particularly want my government telling me that I have to wear a mask. And so I think that's a choice that I can make. We know a lot about this virus now. We know the mortality rate's probably less than 0.1%. We know that it doesn't really affect children. If they do get it, they don't get sick. And so I think you got to look at your personal circumstances. You got to look at your surroundings. You got to decide if that's right for you. And I'm a firm believer that that's at this point a personal choice. And I encourage people, if they want to wear a mask, to wear a mask. But I don't wear a mask all that often, to be honest.
Okay, I have thoughts, Dan, but I'll let you go first. What do you think about that? He's a doctor, after all. Let's acknowledge that. Dr. Ronnie Jackson.
I don't know if you, not to put you on the spot, John, but do you know who gave him this credential? Like, where did he get this doctorate from? Is it a doctorate in, like, actual science, or is it, like, a doctorate in philosophy?
No, that's the thing. Supposedly, he had an okay reputation up until the beginning of the Trump years. Eventually had some issues, like, back in 2018, Trump tapped him to be the Secretary of Veterans Affairs, and then it came out that there were allegations that he drank on the job and overprescribed medication. But the way that I remember it, up until then, he was believed to be, like, he's formerly in the military, like, he had an okay reputation. It's only really been under Trump, and now where he's, you know, he's running to become an elected Republican, that suddenly you're seeing more of this out-and-out craziness. And in addition, some of the stuff that he said about Trump's health seemed suspect on its face. But no, he apparently is an actual doctor.
Okay, well, thank you for that clarification. Given that, I mean, yeah, I don't get how these people can live in this world where they, the original part where he started his question was this, like, I don't believe I need to wear a mask if I don't want to, even though I think the person before that was saying, well, it seems like there's this evidence of everyone wears masks that we could handle this in 1 to 2 months. Again, if you look at almost every other country, you can see this aspect of what they've been able to done to tamp down the virus, and it's really simple stuff. You don't need to be stubborn about it, and they were able to do it. So that doctor, air quotes, took the time on air to further continue what I guess is a continuing Fox News campaign to misinform and muddy the waters, at best muddy the waters, with how to take basic care of yourself under the guise of continuing this ongoing principle at Fox News of freedom and individualism. But like, it's so shallow, it's so hollow. Even if there were some hypothetical case where we're saying, hey, well, if the government can force us to do this, then what can they force us to do? This isn't even the hypothetical situation. Mm-hmm. We're saying we're not forcing you to wear masks in your house. We're inside. We're fine. But if you go outside, this will help us contain this virus so that again, we're not just trying to contain the virus so we get some points on CNN's death counter board. We're trying to contain the virus so that our resources don't get overwhelmed. There's a reason to doing this. It's a community reason. But like I said, kind of in the beginning of the show, John, that America just doesn't do community. We don't do like public good. It's so rugged individualism. And it's the kind of thing that was just perpetuated on Fox there.
Yeah. Yeah. I get the invocation of the rugged individualism. I think that's BS. I think it's just selfishness. Like, rugged individualism implies that you are actually doing it all yourself. And we know that you scratch the surface of a ruggedly individual Republican congressman and he got some massive aid in college or something like that. I get what you're saying. But yeah, it's this sort of selfishness that what I want is more important than what everyone else needs. Ronnie Jackson, I mean, he had that reputation. So I looked it up while you were speaking. He's a physician of the president under Obama and Trump. I think he's the one that administered Trump's record-breaking cognitive health exam. So just bear that in mind to bring it around to the news of the past few weeks. But think about, like, even if you believe ideologically that it shouldn't be required, that would be a slippery slope, that someday the government would be requiring other things or whatever. Let's say you actually honestly believe that. Even so, think about how irresponsible it is for a doctor to say, you know what, if you want to wear one, I don't personally. I don't really wear one very often. What a bizarre over and above thing where it's not even like, I wear one, but I don't want to be forced to. I want it to be my decision. He's saying, I'm a doctor and I don't even wear one, honestly. Like, what are regular Fox viewers going to take away from that? Are they going to be more or less likely to wear masks? He's risking their lives. He's risking the other people around him. Specifically, they're talking there about Texas. Tons of Republicans. He doesn't seem to give a damn about whether they live or die. This time makes no sense.
Yeah, like, exactly what you're getting at there, John, is, like, a point in the media pipeline that I've talked about in several of my videos at youtube.com/standfortheinternet about, like, how there's this two-step process in conservative media and conservative information spread. Step one is to delegitimize, like, the regular forms of information. So it's the politicization of the CDC, Anthony Fauci, looking through the flawed organization that is the WHO, but taking that through this sort of hyper-politicized, xenophobic, as in like anti-China lens, and kind of like delegitimizing all the main forms of information that, like, you know, the rest of the world is using. And then step two of that is replace it with your own quote-unquote experts, replace it with your own information that uses the credentials and uses the smarts, but they're people who, yeah, maybe they were sellouts from the start, or maybe they chose to sell out recently. Like, I don't know what happened there, but you, as long as you are an expert and you lend your expertise to continuing the line of propaganda, you can be rewarded by getting those sort of like Fox News analyst roles.
Yeah.
Or unfortunately, like as you were saying, the end result of that is misinforming the public on a very deadly, very dangerous virus. And you say this on the show very often, John, the median age of a Fox News viewer is kind of up there and overlapping with the age that this virus does hit hard.
Yes.
So yeah, it's a problem.
100% right. And you're right. You say you spread this sort of stuff so that you can get the Fox like a correspondent or like a guest role, but also to win a Republican congressional race, which Ronnie Jackson is competing in the 13th District of Texas right now. So yeah, imagine like you wonder, what would I do to get elected? Would I kill my own fans? I wouldn't, but there are people who hypothetically would. If it's at least a little bit abstract, they're not going to pull a trigger, but they will tell people to expose themselves to a deadly virus.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Un-F-ing the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of On the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be. Featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
I don't know about you, but I'm always on the lookout for get-out-of-thinking-free cards. Like a principle that someone expresses that's designed to make it seem as if they're thinking critically, but really it's just an excuse to not have to do or think about something that might cause a little bit of cognitive dissonance. So I have an example of that. This is Brian Kilmeade. Brian Kilmeade is one of the hosts of Fox and Friends and thus one of the most powerful people in media on the entire planet. And here is what he had to say about mask science.
Wow, doctor, appreciate it. And that's part of the reason why in the beginning we were told not to wear masks, and we were told it didn't work by the Surgeon General, and not to do it. And then we were told, Dr. Fauci, we should do it only if we feel sick. And then last week we're told it actually should help you not get sick, contract the virus, or give the virus. So I would just love for the medical professionals to get on the same page and there'd be a lot less confusion amongst the Americans.
That wasn't a video I'm playing you from 3 months ago. That was, I believe, this morning, within the last 24 hours, anyway, I believe this morning. And he said, well, early on, they said we don't need to wear the one, which is true. Some doctors did say that very, very early on. And now they say that we should. And then they say that it stops the disease from spreading. Come on, people, get it together. Get on message. No, that's on message. And they've been saying that for literally months. Brian Kilmeade still hasn't caught up. As of this morning, he's still not sure what the weight of scientific opinion on masks is vis-a-vis COVID, which seems like madness for someone making literally millions of dollars every year to analyze the news.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate you, John, for many things. One of them is your kindness and stepping up to the point and saying that there is virtually no way that someone who has this kind of level of resources can honestly deep down believe half the stuff he's saying, or even like the stuff on the mask. It's just like, it's a form of riffing, I guess. It's like you're on the show, you have this like nice set, you're performing this dance of trying to give the best possible arguments for nonsense. I mean, yeah, I mentioned earlier, like the WHO is one organization that definitely could do a lot better in this whole coronavirus pandemic. And there is definitely a way that it could have been emphasized by news outlets, by medical professionals, that welcome to science. Science, when we're learning something new, is often messy, and we hear different things from different places, especially in the beginning. It's really messy. And so if you hear conflicting information, that doesn't mean it's politicized and someone's lying to you like everyone else is. Mm-hmm. It just means that we're learning better information over time. So like, trust the consensus generally. It should have been a messaging from the start. I think, again, responsible shows like this one have largely done that. But because there's this middle ground out there, people like Kilmeade are able to make millions of dollars lying to people.
Yeah, you're 100%. He's 100% right. He makes so much money. But like he obviously knows. And think about it. He's best case scenario. He's saying, well, if you were wrong before and now you're right. Oh, gotcha. I don't have to wear a mask because at one point you were wrong. It's like, well, you know, when I was standing in my living room and I was spraying a fire extinguisher around, you said that that was stupid. Now there's a fire and you want me to use the fire extinguisher? Come on, figure out what you're telling me here. It's like, he knows. We've known for so long. I mean, the mask science. Like, I know Tucker Carlson every night is saying that there isn't science. Take a look at this graphic. Unless you're on a very large screen, you can't make out any of those words, can't you? I apologize for that. The point I'm making here is there are so many studies showing that it's helpful that they won't fit in one standard TDR graphic. There are so many, not to mention just the common sense. It's a germ. It's in your body. You breathe out things. Germs are one of the things that can be breathed out. You don't want to spread it to a person, right? And if someone does breathe it out, you don't want it to go into your mouth, do you? So you wear a mask. How many times have we heard common sense invoked by conservatives over the past few decades? And we have to convince them that it's common sense that it's a bad thing to spread germs. Or that they won't kill you by wearing the mask. Why are doctors wearing masks every day? Why didn't they stop years ago if it was so troubling to your health? If it didn't stop diseases from being spread? I'm losing it every day.
They're the party of, like, protect yourselves, protect your family, protect, like, all the people around you, and do whatever you can to get that protection, even if it involves buying weapons that kill people. But you won't even put a piece of cloth on your face. Like, you find it unmanly to, like, I don't know what psyche or whatever deep ingrained things people are having here, but yeah, you're right. It's just such nonsense. It's hard to deal.
Who's the, there's that Australian comedian, his sketch about, his little segment about gun control went viral, where he was like,
Jim Jefferies.
Yeah. So he was saying, like, effectively that we love having guns in our homes in America for home protection. But, like, there's not, like, enthusiasts about home protection that love having a really thick door. Like, it's defense isn't sexy enough. It's offense, which leads me to believe that the only chance we had in this pandemic was if the virus was big enough that you could blast it with a shotgun. If you can't shoot it, we got no chance because we're not a defensive people. We have the Department of Defense, which is all about sending troops out there, okay? We don't like to hunker down and protect ourselves unless we're Trump running to the bunker.
I want to read one super chat. Okay. Someone's Kai Allen said, "Hey Dan, such a treat to see your majoring energy on TDR. I just love talking about myself." But no, they said a question for y'all. What do you think are the best ways to address bad faith actors? And I think you know my answer, John. But
would you like to take that on?
You don't. For folks who want, like, some Dan lore, what I worked on a lot in college, I went to Berkeley, and a lot of right-wing trolls tried to use the campus as, like, an example for why free speech is dying, and maybe if we have time, we'll maybe get to a story about that later. But the news wasn't telling the full story, and what a lot of the students were there were kind of seeing the blatantly obvious thing, that when you had these bad actors like Milo Yiannopoulos, like Ben Shapiro, like, I don't even want to say their names, like Gavin McInnes, and all these other, like, Ann Coulter, and all these other, like, right-wingers who, like, tried to basically come to Berkeley just to have some sort of incident, and then have news cameras at that incident, and then be able to act like they're the victim because of this incident, and write books about this incident, and go on talks about this incident, and debate 19-year-olds about this incident. Like, it's all about perpetuating the grift. And so the best way to deal with a bad faith actor is to not feed the bad faith actor. Milo Yiannopoulos getting canceled is, like, one of the best things to happen to politics in a while. I think it would be worse if he had more oxygen. And so I'm glad people like that are gone. Alex Jones, we, like, us in the media, we see some weird stuff about that on Twitter sometimes every once in a while. But, like, imagine how Alex Jones being on all the platforms he would have been before would have been feeding the mask hysteria. I'm glad that there are just a couple little things on the margins here and there that we just don't have to deal with, and the world's already bad enough. So, like, genuinely try. That doesn't mean, like, write people off, because I think sometimes people on the left are too quick to write others off on their opinions. Try to hear people out. But if you notice a pattern when you're arguing where they're priorities seem to be consistent here but inconsistent over here, and when you address that they use some rhetorical tactic to try to switch the conversation on you, then you can start to decide whether or not they're a bad faith actor, and then whether or not you continue dealing with them. But spend your time on the people who are gettable.
I think that that's a great strategy. Largely, I mean, you know, we've talked about, like, pundit debates and stuff like that, and I know people disagree. I feel like it's a big waste of time because there's no winning. The whole purpose is brand building and audience building. Like, just being there is the victory for them. So anyway, but yeah, no, I do agree with you. And yeah, also that I think that that's a great way to respond to people when it has become clear. Like, after 3 years of lying about Sandy Hook, we get to write you off. But let's not write you off immediately for the first comment. Yeah. I'm very worried about what's going to end up happening with kids during this pandemic, thanks to the fact that sending kids back to school has become like the newest front in the unnecessary, needless culture war behind the pandemic. Trump sort of launched us into it with his tweets about how, hey, if Germany, Denmark, Norway, and Sweden can do it with no problems, then we should be able to too, of course, forgetting, as we pointed out at the time, that they have far, 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 far less coronavirus than we do. And the issue is that no matter how many times a guest goes on Fox and says, don't worry about kids, they don't get it, they can't spread it, and all of that, apparently they can, because nearly one-third of every person under 18 years old tested for the coronavirus in Florida tested positive for the virus, according to a report last Friday. A full one-third. Now, yes, you can ask, how are they choosing who to test and all of that? Fine, let's have these questions, let's find out as much as we can, but the issue is that they are getting it. They are not immune, no matter how much we like to imagine that they will be. Now, they are less likely to be symptomatic. They're less likely to have severe immediate consequences from a COVID infection, but that doesn't mean that there isn't any danger. Some have died, and doctors, such as Dr. Alina Alonzo, the Palm Beach County's health department director, says, we are seeing damage to the lungs in these asymptomatic children. We don't know how that is going to manifest a year from now or 2 years from now. Is that child going to have chronic pulmonary problems or not? And so we need to bear in mind that just because the kids don't immediately need to be put on ventilators and don't immediately die at large numbers, although some have died, it doesn't mean that it doesn't matter that they have it, that it doesn't have consequences.
Yeah,
that's on schools.
Yeah, no, that's really good analysis there on that. I'm really sympathetic because I, outside of this political realm, which we've kind of talked about as being super cursed, like there are people out there who are, if they are lucky enough to be able to work from home and they have kids, their kids are at home and it's really hard to deal with kids because yeah. of the way the educational system sits in our country. It's the way overworked parents are able to have their kids be kind of taken care of and like theoretically taught things during the day while they work. And so doing that's very hard. And there's also legitimate developmental issues. So like this gap in education, I think there's going to be studies done years from now by social scientists on what long-term effects this is going to have on kids and their developmental ages, like preschool, early childhood development, that kind of thing. This gap is really hard, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, we're looking at, we need to weigh all of these health things. And we have these cases where even asymptomatic kids, okay, maybe kids aren't going to have the high mortality rates you're seeing with people at different ages or with different chronic conditions. Mm-hmm. But I remember being a kid and discovering my peanut allergy, like as a kid,
yeah.
just in school. And so like, I would hate for that's a really big jump. But the thing is, I'm saying when you're a kid, that's when you discover you have things wrong with you. So like, I would hate to discover I have some like respiratory issue or there seems to be more or less of a respiratory thing and hit the vascular system of the body. But I hate to learn that I have this kind of issue as a kid with COVID because of issues or because of decisions that were made by people in power that were just plainly wrong and plainly out of tune with science. Yeah. That would be terrible childhood.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. And the possibility of lifelong effects. We just got a super chat from A New Hope saying, I work in healthcare in Florida. Kids are testing positive and some hospitalized. Good God, people wake up. Yeah, they're seeing it. And we don't know what the long-term effects will be. Hopefully nothing. But there's indications that it might have long-term effects. And that is incredibly scary. It's incredibly scary for them. Also, when, you know, Fox will have three pundits on to talk about opening the schools, and they're like, the kids, they get it at very low rates and all of that. The mortality rate is so low for kids, and I think that's good. And then I wonder, what's the mortality rate for their 65-year-old teacher? Probably worse. Probably worse. And they yeah. will be surrounded by tons of these kids. And the thing is, any individual kid is going to have a very low chance, I guess, of getting it and spreading it, being hospitalized from it. But we're not talking about one kid. We're talking about masses of kids, millions of kids, and lots of teachers and support staff and principals and janitors and all of that, too. It's a mess. It doesn't mean it's a mess that we can't fix, but we're not going to fix it with just, yeah, we got to do it no matter what happens. We got to live with it. Just go back. That is not a solution. It's not a solution we should live with anyway. So in America, we have a few big social trends. Let's talk about the confluence of two of them. One is the rise of the Karen, and the other is the fact that as selfish as we tend to be as individuals, you've probably seen any number of massive GoFundMes that raise money for people who've been abused by America or its people in a variety of different ways. Well, in this story, we've got a combination of those two things. So it started when a woman named Amber Gills posted a photo of San Diego Starbucks barista Lenin Gutierrez with the caption, quote, "Meet Lenin from Starbucks who refused to serve me because I'm not wearing a mask. Next time I will wait for cops and bring a medical exemption." So look, this is a pretty typical sort of Karen mask sort of story that we've had before. It's someone who feels like it's their right to expose other people to the disease they might have. But the good side of the story was that a stranger in Orange County, Matt Cohen, said he wanted to donate a few dollars to the barista in tip money. So he started a GoFundMe for Lenin. As the photo on Facebook filled with hundreds of thousands of interactions and comments from people supporting the barista, the tip money eventually hit more than $100,000 to be donated to Lenin. Lenin said he plans to use that money to further his education and also follow his dreams of dancing, which is admittedly a beautiful outcome to this story. But the story's not done yet. Because if there's one thing a Karen won't stand for, it's good things happening to people who aren't terrible. So Gill says that she now wants half of that money. Quote, "It was discrimination, and everybody was okay with it, and enabling and rewarding that behavior." So she wants $50,000 that random nice people donated to this barista. And I have to say, yeah, she should get it, obviously. Is it not hers? Did she not earn it? I mean, if she wasn't the Karen that she was, Lenin wouldn't have gotten the GoFundMe, I guess.
This was clearly a joint venture in between Lenin, who is, you know, for someone who is named as such, is clearly not wanting to spread the wealth at all. So there's definitely a little bit of a problem there. You kind of wonder what roots that name kind of comes to. But like, yeah, this was a joint venture in between this Karen woman and this barista who decided to get together and do this guy. I can't
wait, Dan. Don't say any more because that now seems like a possibility. Okay, we're going to make a viral video. I'm going to be the Ken. We're going to raise a bunch of money for you. And we're both going to become dancers. No, oh, obviously yeah. You're joking. No, it's just, it was a nice thing that people did for him. Look, I get that she's mad. Because she probably got a lot of bad social media attention. I would say she could have considered herself warned by the dozens of other people who the same thing happened to when they announced that they don't have to wear masks and it's on all of the other employees to just accept that they're going to get COVID. But yeah, it's not her money. There's no case here. She says that she might sue. Good luck to you. I have a feeling it's not going anywhere.
I hope that Lenin countersues for legal costs. Like, let's go. Let's add some more money to this. I think this is the best case ever for that barista. Like, by basically just respecting the customer, they got a tip from good people in society who had felt and understood where they were coming from. Mm-hmm. And I think this has gone well. If this woman wants to make it worse and sue again and get it all caught up in court, yeah, countersue for legal fees. Make it amazing. Like, add a little cherry on top.
Yeah, you're saltier than me. I despise this sort of behavior, obviously. I am hesitant even to cover these stories generally because it's a regular person. Like, they're doing bad things, totally. I don't like to unleash on individuals. So, like, I hope that no more, I don't want her to have any more abuse or whatever, but she doesn't get any of the money and she needs to just fade into, like, this isn't going to help her. If the reaction that you got from your first interaction with Lenin was really negative, do you think that this is going to make it better somehow? But she seems to think so, because when asked for an apology or a message to the public, she said, "No, absolutely not. I feel like I need the apology. I've been discriminated against. I'm the one who's sick." Like, this is not the solution. I know that you feel aggrieved or whatever, but employees at, like, private businesses, they get to control it. I guarantee she believes in, you know, like, the power of the market and the ability of these companies to determine their own fate. This is the one loophole that she's trying to find. No, it's just she needs to move on. You know, Lennon, I hope that he does great things with the money, goes to school, becomes a dancer, all that stuff. But obviously she doesn't deserve any of it.
Yeah, I agree with you very much. Like, don't over cancel, air quotes, these people where, like, you ruin their lives permanently. Maybe you believe that, hopefully you believe that people can get better over time. That being said, she could make her life a lot easier if she just stopped talking. Don't say you're discriminated against. Don't say you deserve any of the money. Take the L and just go on with your life.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. Yeah, and if she does, I hope that everyone just let her go on with her life. And hopefully that life will not include spreading a deadly pathogen. Donald Trump is changing up his campaign strategy, announcing Wednesday night that he's replacing campaign manager Brad Parscale with longtime political aide Bill Stepien, as recent polls show him falling further behind Joe Biden. The president announced this on social media, saying that Parscale, who has been with me for a long time, will stay as a senior advisor focusing on digital and data strategies. Parscale has been marginalized in the campaign for several weeks, officials said, with Trump angry about a botched rally in Oklahoma, where far fewer people attended than expected, and is lagging poll numbers. And so it's funny, Dan, like after that whole incident happened and the rally was a bust, there was talk about the possibility that he'd be fired. Anyone saying that was ridiculed as like, oh, it's just wishful thinking, it's not gonna happen. And then flash forward 3 weeks, it happens. Although to be fair, it might be less the rally and more, this is not a winning strategy, according to national polls, at least. Like, Trump has never been leading, and he's losing about as bad as he has at any point in this race. Like, it might just be a wise decision. Brad Parscale's strategy obviously isn't working. Do you think it's a good change? Do you think it actually signals a change in what the campaign's going to look like?
Literally no. If anything, this is, if you're an astute political observer, this signals that things are still business as usual in the kind of Trump circus, and that is kind of part of the calculus you should take into the rest of the year up to the election. Because not even when Trump was inaugurated, not even since Trump started his campaign, basically since honestly, most of my entire life, when Trump decided to start that NBC show, The Apprentice, we kind of know how this works. Like, there's this big thing, you get put up to a big task. This is in the show, or like this is in his career now as a politician and as a president. You get put up for a big task. If you make the big guy look bad in that big task, regardless of what the big guy is doing on his own, and regardless of any of the other factors going into it, you make him look bad, you're in charge. You're out. You're fired. Like, that was the catchphrase. And so when we all had the Schadenfreude moment when the Tulsa rally turned out to be entirely or like nearly empty, and Trump had to take those photo ops, including that one where he was walking back completely just like tattered and defeated. Like,
yeah,
that's a huge firing. Trump saw that photo.
That's and, a like, firing.
You think Trump saw that photo and was like, keeping Parscale? You know what? Secretary of State. You know, maybe he was loyal, maybe he did all the loyal things, but you can't hand Trump that big of an L and keep your job. But like, to your point, the poll numbers have nothing to do with Brad. Like, Trump is kind of doing this to himself. So it's good to see that, you know, like, that's good to see. But, you know, Trump's still being Trump. And so it's not like there's any sort of course correction coming from that camp at all.
I agree. Like, two things can be true. Brad Parscale can seem, to all indications, to be a genuinely bad person. And also, how are you supposed to help a candidate as bad as Donald Trump? Like, it's a pandemic, and he doesn't care that people are dying by the thousands. That's going to be tough for a digital ad to overcome. So that's in defense of Brad Parscale. Now let's just briefly dunk on him. So you might remember the biggest moment in the media for Brad Parscale probably was several months ago when he announced in a particular, like I would say tone-deaf way, but it's like the GOP always does this now. For nearly 3 years, we've been building a juggernaut campaign, Death Star. It is firing on all cylinders, data, digital, TV, political, surrogates, coalitions, etc. In a few days, we start pressing fire for the first time. Although, correction, it did take them a couple of months, but they did press fire. Anyway, no, it's and the idea that like we're the Death Star, they're the bad guys, but they like Trump is Thanos. It doesn't make any sense. What are you gonna do?
It's really like Brett Parscale watched a little bit of Succession, and he's just like, oh, I want to be like Logan Roy. He's the good guy. I'm going to say, be just like him and talk just like him, because he's strong and people like him and he's relatable. He represents the everyman.
I don't watch that show. But I get it.
But, yeah.
But if I could take this fun little story of the comeuppance of a bad person and just add a little bit of poop to the top of that sundae, the joke is kind of on us at the end of the day, because Parscale and his companies have taken in about $40 million from the Trump campaign already. Parscale even put himself in one of Trump's ads. But no, he's become enriched, and he's still being paid by the campaign a huge amount of money, probably to keep him hushed up until after the election. So I think in the end, it's embarrassing for him, but he has made so much money, I doubt it stings that bad.
I mean, until he gets that PPP loan, it's not going to be that much. I mean, so everyone loots from Trump. Got to get that PPP loan to get, like, the creme de la creme. Like, if you're going to get, like, the corruption holy trinity.
Exactly. We've talked for years about the militarization of law enforcement, the police getting like MRAPs and, you know, weapons straight from Afghanistan and things like that. But let's talk about the more subtle spending that they do, the sorts of spy gadgets that law enforcement likes to buy. Let's talk about a company called Advanced Covert Technology that's been selling surveillance tools to police for over two decades. It has its latest catalog as an example of the expensive Hollywood-style gadgets, and just wait until you see it, being marketed to law enforcement agencies out of the public eye. How significant are their sales? Well, we have some information on that. ACT has previously sold more than $60,000 of audio and video equipment to a variety of federal agencies like the Department of Justice and the U.S. Army, as well as police departments across many states. So what are they selling, these law enforcement agencies? Things like this. Those are audio and video spy equipment designed to look like baseball caps, Monster energy drinks, which I find offensive as a person who has enjoyed many Monster energy drinks. You have things like this dollar bill that has a 48-hour battery life, not bad, and records audio. It's a
dollar bill recording device.
Exactly.
Oh my god.
It's pretty cool looking, although, like, if I was the mobster, I would wonder why, like, one of my lieutenants always has $1 bill sticking out of his pocket. It's like, why does Joey One Bill always got that one bill? I don't know. But anyway, it's not bad. Let's talk about a little. Hold on one second. Let's see just a few more. They've got fake vape pens, sports caps, gift cards. Gift cards, not to buy stuff. They are the spy equipment. Car keys, banned t-shirts for things like Johnny Cash and Jane's Addiction that all hold spy cameras. And again, this is designed to be sold to law enforcement. So if you see a cop coming up to you with like a baton and a Johnny Cash shirt, be on your guard. What do you think?
Oh, first of all, I'm glad I can finally say Vape Nash is cop. Like, anyone who does Vape Nash is a cop. Because I've been feeling like I've been in the minority and saying, I've been in many minorities, but I've been in the minority of saying that for a while, but it's totally true now. Anyone who has a vape, probably a cop. It's just a weird thing. It's vape sunglasses. I don't like it, but this is, yo, surveillance capitalism, man. It's wild. When I first saw this story, there's some of these gadgets that I was like, okay, because I think I'm still kind of stuck in my nostalgic early 2000s Spy Kids world of, like, gadgets. Mm-hmm. I want to go home, John. And I'm just in this world of gadgets where there's, like, cool little, like, guns and lasers and radars and stuff like that, where things can have spy equipment. And the closest thing to that they sell is probably the GPS, because I don't think anyone has a GPS in their car they use anymore. But, like, the baseball cap, the Monster, the vape, like, why don't they make some, like video surveillance Timberland shoes? Like, what are you gonna do next? Like, just get the whole look down. No, but this is wild. And, like, the serious point is that this is gonna be used by undercover cops. This is gonna be used by a lot of these departments that are gonna potentially take Trump talking points that Antifa is the terrorist threat that is embedded in our communities. We need to start embedding in these communities. So yeah, watch out for, what do you say, Joey One Bill?
Joey One Bill. Tommy Monster, why are you always drinking that Monster? That same Monster, when are you going to finish it? It's only that big. But anyway, yeah, you're 100% right. The reason that this is especially important and timely is that we know that with the protests that have been going on, there's just mass surveillance of them. And this is obviously, I guess, the most Hollywood or cartoonish. There's other forms of surveillance that are probably scarier. They diverted, like, spy planes down and things like that during the initial protests, which is obviously horrifying. But one added layer of issue with this is that while the co-founder of this company, Ryan Mitchell, says it's very serious that it doesn't get out what this equipment is, undercover officers could get killed if the bad guy finds out what the equipment is, you are jeopardizing someone's life. This is what they said when the reporters from Vice came calling. The issue with that is that a quick Google search reveals that very similar equipment is available for sale direct to civilians through electronics retailers. For example, B&H, which I've bought a camera equipment from, sells an assortment of spy gear posing as common household items, including a fake Monster energy drink. But the thing is, they sell it for a fraction of the price that ACT is selling to law enforcement, and they can do that because police agencies are given tons of money to just buy whatever toys they want. They don't have to look for bargains. If they really wanted a dollar bill that recorded your voice and your heartbeat or whatever, they could probably go get it far cheaper. Companies like this are designed to prey on the overinflated budgets of law enforcement agencies.
You're super right, though. Shout out friend of the show, B&H Photo, probably the home of the warm heart of all creatives out there who have need to buy equipment on the cheap.
Wait, who's the host of B&H Photo? I wonder if I've watched this.
No, I didn't say the host of B&H Photo. I just said just like shout out to them. Got a little mention in the story.
No, I've had a great experience with B&H Photo. Don't you worry. Lots of good photography YouTubers out there, by the way. But anyway, yeah, it is an interesting story. Way more details and pictures of the gear are available at Vice, so definitely go and take a look at that. I believe it was posted in the last day. Just yesterday, Barry Weiss, who, if you don't know who that is, you're a regular person. But anyway, no, she worked on the editorial side of the New York Times. She resigned yesterday, saying that she was being bullied by her coworkers because they called her out for lying on Twitter, and she implied that there was this culture war going on generationally at the New York Times. So you would imagine that a woman choosing to resign from a position like this, okay, that's a story potentially, but not one you would expect that, like, the president would be tweeting about, saying the New York Times is under siege. The real reason is that it's become fake news. They never covered me correctly. They blew it. People are fleeing. A total mess. No, people aren't fleeing. Barry flew. That's what happened. But it's not just the president. You have Fox News critiquing the lack of coverage of a media elite choosing to move from one job to another. How dare CNN and MSNBC, amidst both a pandemic and nationwide civil rights protests, not waste hours, nay days, on the story of Barry Weiss choosing to quit. And then, of course, Fox Amazing. News has been all over it with a Tom Cotton op-ed and a Ben Shapiro op-ed and constant guests coming on to discuss this woman who works for the New York Times choosing to quit and start her own media venture. Dan, what do you think?
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah, this is the cycle. Welcome to the cycle. Welcome to Grift Nation, John. We enjoy Grift Nation here. it's our joke for what happens when an aggrieved figure, this always happens to someone, usually on a podcast or usually on some pedestal, because these people who complain about getting canceled and canceled culture and being silenced for their opinions are usually saying that with like a huge megaphone and a huge microphone. Like, the Fox News thing that we had a while ago, where they were comparing how many seconds that the other cable news networks spent mm-hmm. on the resignation of a New York Times op-ed writer, is the idea that the same network that claims that Obama was an elitist for putting a certain type of mustard on his burger mm-hmm. is saying that other networks are elitist for not covering the firing of a New York Times reporter. What does this matter materially to, like you said, the coronavirus, the George Floyd demonstrations, mm-hmm. the impending rent issues, the yes. economic issues that's underboiling under here, homelessness, right. like the climate. Like, there's so many actual issues to focus on, even issues that Fox News could pretend to focus on. Like, I'd almost rather take some, like, Chaz B-roll over this. Mm-hmm. It's so maddening. And, like, it goes to Grift Nation. It goes to what this idea is, that You start by saying you're aggrieved that you speaking at your high platform can no longer do that anymore. So now I'm going to be silenced. And she resigned on her own. She Yes. resigned on her own. So she's not really being silenced. All she's doing is, like you said, I don't know if she's officially announced this, but for certain, the next step of Grift Nation is you start your own independent media venture. You say that you're going to do an interview show. You're going to talk to independent thinkers. You're going to Yep. let them say whatever you want to. And then it's just Mm-hmm. from there, it's only a ticking clock to who is the first Nazi you let on the program. It's like, is your show going to be the Nazi show? Or like, who is the first person you're going to let on the program who is maybe not a Nazi? I understand it's like Barry Weiss is Jewish, so it's like far. But like, who is the first person who is going to have extremely reprehensible opinions that
yeah.
you are going to kind of walk around and say, hey, this is free speech.
Yeah.
Hey, you can have these opinions. Who cares that I have this platform that I'm complaining is being robbed from me? I'm just letting this person talk. It's a ticking time, like, clock to see when that changeover happens.
Yeah, you're 100% right. Some white identitarian guest or something like that. A philosopher, really. That'll be one of the guests. Small correction. If step one is quitting your job, step two isn't starting the media venture. Step two is billionaire gives you millions to then start step three of the media venture. Because again,
yeah.
she's a media elite. She is going to be fine. She's going to be handed money. I'm glad that you pointed out, because it can't be stressed enough, she resigned. She wasn't fired. Although, and you know, we can't read anyone's mind. I think that she wanted to be, because that would have been better for the grift, in the same way that Dave Rubin didn't title his book Don't Burn This Book because he was genuinely worried you would. He wants to present himself as someone under assault, and so he titled that that way. Yeah, and in terms of, like, the criticism for people not covering it, I forget who said it, but it was like, this story is literally, that thing, the Fox thing is, media elites criticize media elites for not covering media elite resigning. That's all it is. And I think Jordan tweeted yesterday something to the effect of like, one iron worker turns to another, "Do you hear about Barry Weiss?" Like, no, it doesn't. No, that's not, it's not a thing. It doesn't matter. It is a personnel change. It is an optional, voluntary personnel change that someone is doing. It is not actually evidence of cancel culture. You can't have it both ways. She can't use her massive media platform to talk about how silent she is, like, while hoping to be fired as a demonstration of it. And when that doesn't happen, she just quits anyway, and that becomes the demonstration of it. Well, isn't it nice that you win, you know, like, heads I win, tails you lose sort of situation that they've set up there?
Yeah, it's like with Ben Shapiro, it's like with going on college campuses to speak. It's you're trying to incite something so that you can say you're the victim so that you can sell things. Mm-hmm. It's that's Grift Nation. We are in it. We are witnessing it. Just watch the steps and tell me I'm right.
Exactly. The Progressive Pack Midas Touch is out with another ad, and I largely don't play these anymore, but this one is particularly fun, and I just want to have a little bit of fun with Dan, so take a look at their most recent ad.
Trust me, I'm like a smart person. I'm like the super genius of all time.
Donald Trump loves to brag about how smart and mentally fit he is.
President Trump revealing that he took a cognitive test.
I aced the test. Doctors, that's an unbelievable thing. Rarely does anybody do what you just did.
The truth, Don is dumb.
Yeah, I had a mask on. I sort of liked the way I looked.
Looked like the Lone Ranger.
Former Defense Secretary Jim Mattis claims Donald Trump has the understanding of a fifth or sixth grader. Former White House Chief of Staff John Kelly called Trump an idiot. And Rex Tillerson?
You still haven't denied that you called him a moron.
As president, he's failed at every subject. His handle on history?
1775, our army ran the ramparts. It took over the airports.
What about English?
I had the best words.
Sock rocket.
Stank singer.
Bipartisan. Solutions.
I tested positively toward negative.
His grasp on geography is no better.
We're building a wall in Colorado.
Colorado?
Belgium is a beautiful city.
And when it comes to science, Trump's arrogance and stupidity are now killing us on a mass scale.
Relax. It's going to sort of just disappear.
I feel good about it.
That's all it is, just a feeling.
We're very much going to put pressure on governors to open the schools.
Is the man who has failed at everything who you want making decisions for your child's future?
Okay, The F is a nice touch. Okay, so that was fun. And they obviously, at the end, they made it substantive. Why does it matter that you have someone so deeply stupid? Yeah, first, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't love these ads unless they're like, where we see them online and then they're hyper-targeted to possibly the only place where this matters, which is cable news markets in swing areas. Because that's the only way you're going to appeal to people. Because with most people, you've, at this point, made your decision on whether you think Trump is fit to be in office or not, let alone all the other policies. But nevertheless, I like these hard-hitting ads because I think that too often the left, definitely like this broad coalition, will kneecap itself and say that there's one strategy that is better than the other strategy. There's one strategy we should use, there's one strategy we shouldn't use. And I think there is a marketplace for debate around these kinds of topics and discussions for sure. But if one company, like, of course not Lincoln Project, because they're connected to basically pro-Bush people, but like, if, I don't know exactly the background of Midas Touch, but if there are people who want to make ads in this tone where they're very hard-hitting and taking the low blows that Donald Trump might take towards someone who is like Donald Trump, who is a Democrat, then go for it, as long as you're putting the ads in the right place.
Yeah, I agree with you there might be a best strategy, but that doesn't mean that's the only thing you do. Like, you campaign everywhere. You campaign in different ways for different markets. I agree. You're trying to appeal to different sorts of people, even people that might have lots in common. I mean, you know, many people on the left, they're not all the same. They don't all respond the same to different arguments. And the thing is, again, if the ad had ended two-thirds of the way through and it was just, hey, you remember all the dumb stuff he said? Look, I would have personally found that funny, but I wouldn't find it at this point to be very persuasive to most people. I doubt there's a single person, including people that like Trump, that would acknowledge that he's stupid or that it would matter to. They think that it's endearing or charming that he's an absolute moron. It's the fact that they're tying it back to the most substantive thing you can right now, which is stopping, you know, another 100,000 or 200,000 people dying from this pandemic in the very near future. And so I'm glad that they did that. And even if they didn't, some people want to be entertained, you know? There's a lot of hate for preaching to the choir, but choirs like preaching sometimes, you know? Like, you're standing there for a long time. It's nice when someone directs their attention to you. But anyway, yeah, I found it to be fun. And I think that keeping the focus on the pandemic broadly is a good idea. But I would add, as you alluded to, I think in our last story, that making sure that people know that the pandemic is not just the people who have died and suffered and their friends and family. That's extremely significant, but it's not just that. It's the lives that have been devastated financially due to it, and the lack of aid that was given by our elected officials, and then the impending crises that are coming up behind it, eviction and the mortgage crisis and all of that. I mean, there's nothing more substantive than that, and with the election just a few months out, we got to make sure that people stay focused on it and not allow Trump to just change the conversation to beans or statues of beans or whatever he's going to do. You don't think he'll do it?
I mean, at this point, the only thing I can hope for as in this administration and the remainders of it, hopefully what remains of it, because I'm so numb to everything, is that Trump continues to give us this great meme content of him just sitting in front of, like, at the Oval Office desk with a bunch of beans in front of him. I'm gonna be photoshopping a lot of album covers into that, honestly, for the next 5 to 6 years. So that's perfect for me. I'll take that little win wherever I can get it.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, Dan, thank you so much for joining us. I know we're right up at the limit time-wise. Where can people see more of your content?
Yes, so on Twitter at Dan from the Web, that is where I am mostly on. If you're watching this on YouTube, hi, I have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/DanFromTheInternet, where I just did a video on news and why news sometimes makes us feel kind of sad and down and hopeless, but what to do with that feeling and why that feeling is there. That's an exciting project. And yes, I do a music podcast called Audio Face. I just talk about music news and music culture every single week. I think Kanye's presidential campaign is already over.
I think it
like
is.
People are saying it's already over, which is cool. I guess just like release the album already so we can get on with our lives. But check me out there. It's been super fun, John. Love to come back.
I'd love to have you back on. Yeah, everyone, check out his videos. They're very well researched, very well produced, much higher production than anything I put together here. So definitely go take a look at that. And Dan, it's
how is he saying this on the show? I helped him. Like, how are
you?
No,
I'm talking about
that?
The home version. Everything you did was gold. And I'm just talking about my effect. The remote producers are doing great work, but then it gets filtered through me, and the whole thing's muddied. But anyway, it's always good to have you on, and hopefully we'll talk soon, Dan.
John, you do the best show that is morning in progressive news on the internet. Always a pleasure. Take care.
I appreciate that. Joining us once again is the congressman representing the 17th District of California, Congressman Ro Khanna. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. Always great to be on.
And we're always happy to have you. And there's a number of topics we'd like to talk about, but I'd like to start with the convention, because it wasn't long ago that we were having guests on talking about how important it was to have you become the co-chair of the California delegation to the DNC. That has since happened. So first, congratulations on that.
Thank you for having guests on to talk about that.
Well, we were happy to. So talk to me about why it matters, why it was important that someone like you, as opposed to, I know some of the other possibilities, I think Gavin Newsom might have been one of the names that I heard. Why was it important to you that you lead this delegation?
It was important because of the issues. I mean, I am fighting for Medicare for all to become part of our platform. Especially when you have a healthcare crisis, where we have just seen that millions of people are losing their jobs. And does it make any sense that they should also lose their healthcare? I mean, if anything has exposed that we ought not to have healthcare tied to employment, it is this pandemic. So I'm working with a lot of the delegates. We do press statements almost every few days. We're doing Twitter threads. We're working with other delegates to push for Medicare for all as part of our party platform, and a number of other issues too.
So, you know, you've got the biggest delegation. You've got people like Barbara Lee, obviously very popular amongst leftists in the U.S. And the hope would be, especially with the nominee being Joe Biden, as opposed to someone like Bernie Sanders, which a lot of progressives are obviously pushing for, is that as part of a months-long strategy to put some pressure on the president, on the nominee, that you having such a big delegation would be a big part of that. What I'm wondering is, with the nature of the pandemic and how it's affecting the way that the convention is going to happen, does that potentially play into your strategy in how you try to push for things with the convention? Does it matter if it's one small convention, satellite conventions, totally virtual, that sort of thing?
Well, I do think it's going to be virtual, especially given the rise in cases that we're seeing around the country. And I think that's the responsible thing. I don't think it's responsible to have people congregate in person. But what that means is that Barbara Lee and I and other activists are doing a lot of Zoom calls with delegates. We're doing calls with the party activists in California and around the country and saying, here are the things that we need to push for to be part of the platform. One of those things is Medicare for all. Another part of the platform has to be a 10% strategic cut in defense.
Mm-hmm. And I know that there's been some progress in getting some people in the Senate to sign on to a plan such as that. So recently, in the past week or so, Joe Biden's team put out some of their updated goals when it comes to the climate and what they're going to do around that, seemingly having accepted a number of the components of plans from people like Inslee and Warren and others. So that seems like an area where, at least in terms of plans, he is willing to budge when pressure is applied. I know that you've mentioned Medicare for All several times. Do you feel like there is actually a good chance that he would move in that direction?
I think it's very low chance that he would move in that direction, but I do think we could get a chance that our platform would have that. I mean, our platform has had that since 1980. And the polling overwhelmingly shows that the American people want that. So we're going to continue to push, and we're going to continue to push on this military budget. I mean, it's $140 billion more than when he left office under Obama. And instead of putting more money in a bloated military and risking confrontation with China and Russia, we ought to be investing in jobs, in clean tech jobs, in solar and wind and energy efficiency and battery storage.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of the issues that you mentioned hypothetically could receive more funding under the new climate plan that Joe Biden has rolled out. I'm curious, since, you know, we have the privilege here at TDR, we get to speak to congressmen like yourself, people who are actually involved in, you know, creating legislation, trying to get it passed. But then also we talk with a lot of our viewers who are just, you know, everyday Americans and people around the world that are trying to get an idea of how likely things are to happen. Right. When something like the Joe Biden plan comes out, I don't react to it in a knee-jerk way saying, well, come on, he's never going to do it. But at the same time, it is a plan. It's not done. What do you think in terms of how we should approach when we seem to be succeeding in applying pressure, but we're obviously still a very long way from it becoming law? How do you react when you see things like that plan?
I think it's a credit to your viewers and mobilization, and don't underestimate them. It's just regular folks. They're the ones who are driving the change. They're the ones who propelled Bernie Sanders. They're the ones who have made Medicare for All part of the national conversation. They're the ones who have made the Green New Deal and the aggressive goals part of the conversation. But we can't let up. I mean, once Biden, even if Biden's elected president, and even if we have the House and the Senate, there has to be continued mobilization. And then it comes to where the president prioritizes. What is he going to spend his political capital on? And that has to be on these issues only if there's a mobilized base.
We're, you know, 4 or 5 months into the American component of the international pandemic that we're experiencing. And thus far, for most Americans, the aid has generally come in the form of potentially up to a $1,200 one-time payment. If you were laid off, as, you know, tens of millions were, enhanced unemployment, that is going to potentially go away within 2 weeks. I'm curious from your point of view, would you have expected that this far into a pandemic that has done so much damage in terms of loss of life and economic damage, that the assistance from the federal government would be as restrained as it's been so far?
No, it's unconscionable. I mean, right in the beginning of the pandemic in March, Tim Ryan and I said, let's give a $2,000 check to every American making under $250,000 so that they can pay their rent, so that they can pay their mortgages, so that they can have life continue. And it's not just good for them, it's good for consumer spending. And yet, while we've seen billions of dollars go to corporations, while we've seen billions of dollars of loans go to banks, while we've seen billions of dollars go to large businesses in the PPP program, we have not had that kind of relief for ordinary Americans. And that's a failure of our political process.
You know, I've been trying to figure out, I've been listening to as many statements from different politicians as possible over the past few weeks about if we have a second round of legislation, which it sounds like we might be moving towards, what'll be included and what won't be included. I have my suspicions, but I'm curious what you think is likely to pass and what might not make it past, for instance, the Senate.
Yeah, well, I'm always candid with you. So I think we're going to get state and local funding of some sort, but it's not going to be the $1 trillion. I do think we'll get a stimulus payment, but it's probably going to be a one-time payment, and it may have heavy restrictions in terms of the income cutoff. And I think we're going to get some extension of the unemployment insurance, but it probably isn't going to be the extra $600 a week. And if we don't get a generous enough package, again, the damage is not just to the working families and the middle class. The damage is people aren't going to have money to spend, and that's going to hurt our economic recovery.
Yeah, and I know that a number of responsible politicians for several months now have been talking about the fact that we obviously have to address the public health and financial crisis that we're in right now. But we should also acknowledge that coming up in not too much longer, potentially, we have an eviction and a mortgage crisis as well. You obviously have an insider's perspective. You're speaking to these people. What is being done to forestall that? Or are we going to be hit in a month or 2 or 3 months by another massive emergency?
I think we're going to be hit. I mean, some of us have said, let's have a national moratorium on rent and mortgage payments, and let's have the federal government step in to pay. So in the case of landlords that are small business owners, but none of that has been included in the relief packages. And so you're in a situation where people are defaulting on rent, defaulting on mortgage, and at some point they may face eviction. So we need laws. We need laws saying you can't evict people for not being able to make rent or mortgage payments at a time where they're not able to work because of something beyond their control.
You know, I'm trying to understand how political considerations play into what they're going to pass and what they're not going to pass. And it would seem to me, as a complete outsider, that on top of, you know, 135,000 plus people dying, having the economy collapse even more in the months leading up to a general election seems like a bad strategy for an incumbent president. And yet, Stephen Moore, you know, close advisor of the president on economic matters, he was just on Sebastian Gorka's show in the last day, and he said that if they continued the unemployment payments, that the president could never be reelected, as if helping out people who've lost their jobs would actually be a detriment to him politically. I'm curious how you think politics is playing into that, and if there's any way that we can try to move past those sorts of considerations.
Well, it's so ideological. They have this false theory that if they continue the unemployment benefits, people aren't going to return to work and the unemployment rate is going to stay high. A far likelier explanation is if they stop those unemployment payments, people aren't going to have spending money. If you're not buying things on Amazon or buying things at a local restaurant or buying food supply, you're actually going to depress the economy and have more people out of work. So what has saved this economy from going into a depression is the Fed and the congressional response, and they're talking about taking that away. I think they're just so blinded by their ideology. I personally don't know anyone who wouldn't have a job if they could have one at this time of uncertainty. And the idea that getting a $600 check a week from the government is preventing someone from work is just, they haven't talked to people maybe who actually are in that circumstance.
In terms of the pandemic, there are a couple of different developments over the past few weeks that I'd like us to touch on. One obviously is either the second wave, or depending on how you look at it, the second spike of the first wave, since we never really got out of it. And then also that the conversation about how we should respond to the pandemic has been focused quite a bit on getting schools reopened and sending kids back. And so I'd like your perspective on that. Should it happen? If it does happen, what sorts of safeguards should be required?
Well, here's the first of all, the hypocrisy. The Republicans keep saying education is a local matter, a local matter. And now you have the president of the United States telling the entire country what they should do. How about having communities make the decision whether it's safe for those communities? Some communities will say, no, there's too much of a spread of COVID. Other communities, maybe it's safer. But in any case, before people go back to school, they have to make sure that teachers have the resources to be able to teach, including in distance learning, that they have PPE, that they have social distancing, and that they feel safe. And there is no way we should be reopening a school if kids don't feel safe, if teachers don't feel safe, and if families don't feel safe. We can do the remote learning in that circumstance instead of risking people's health.
And if you do go with remote learning, the schools will still obviously need funding that's been threatened in recent weeks by Donald Trump, saying that if they don't send the kids back in a physical capacity, they'll just cut off the funding. I never necessarily know in any particular Trump threat, whether it's just his bravado or if he'll actually try to go through with it. In this particular case, considering the consequences, which do you think it is?
I think it's more bravado, but it's just unconscionable that he would even threaten playing politics with school budgets. And again, the irony of having the president of the United States telling local school boards what they should do. I mean, this is exactly opposite to what Republicans believe. And I think this is why the president's numbers are so low. I mean, he has continually thought he could just bully the coronavirus or bully people into moving past it. But, you know, you can't talk your way out of a virus. And if he just paused and if he said, let's make sure, yes, I want people to return, but I'm concerned about safety and I want people to give schools the funding and resources so they can make responsible decisions, I think that would actually be not only better for our country, more in its political interests. But we've just had a moment, I think, which has exposed the fundamental weaknesses of electing someone who just knows how to spin and market. And right now we're crying out for real leadership.
You know, I have a question. I wonder if maybe marketing is sort of at the heart of it, that Trump and other Republicans are saying the kids have to go to school. Some of his most powerful media allies, you know, hosts on Fox like Tucker Carlson, go a step further, saying not only do the kids have to go back to school, but masks are unscientific. They shouldn't use masks. They shouldn't socially distance. So I want them to be back in school, and I do not want there to be any safety measures in place, which to me, I try to, you know, extend a little bit of goodwill and try to figure out what the goal there is, it seems extremely dangerous in terms of the kids. Now, obviously, the president hasn't said things like this, but for those who support him who are pushing for not only them going back, but having no protections, I mean, what do you think the goal of that is?
I think for whatever reason, it's become a cultural issue, but I was looking at history, and they said that in the 1918, during the Spanish flu, there were actually anti-masking clubs that emerged in the United States, and people were protesting wearing masks back then, and of course, 675,000 people died. It's a shame that we learned anything 100 years later, but these have become cultural issues, and it's important to realize that that's the pressure that the president is feeling from elements of his base, and that's why he's been so late to do the basics. I mean, if from the president's interest, he should have been saying masks as soon as it became known that masks work, and that would have given us the best chance to reopen the economy, to reopen schools, and to contain the pandemic. So it has just been the consequences of not listening to scientists has been disastrous.
Yeah. Actually, I'm glad that you brought up listening to scientists. My final question, one of the big developments in terms of the White House's response to the pandemic this week was deciding that continuing the system wherein states and hospitals report information about hospitalizations and cases and things like that to the CDC needs to end. Instead, the information will be given to HHS and will not be publicly available. You know, many people in progressive media are worried that this is an attempt to apply a stranglehold to the information and hide the extent of the pandemic. Do you share those fears, or are there other ways that we'll find out about these numbers that you think will still be trustworthy?
I do share those fears. I mean, the CDC is the least political, and I've said, in fact, that the hospital should continue to provide the data to the CDC. I don't see why. I can see why you would want to improve the CDC system, but they have a unique scientific expertise, and to put it in a different department that could have political appointees concerns me very deeply. So I think this is an effort there that's subject to manipulation, and it's of great concern. And that's why I said hospitals should continue to report to the CDC.
Yeah. Congressman Rukana, we appreciate you joining us, and we wish you the best of luck at the convention, whatever form it may come in pushing for progressive priorities.
Thank you, and thank you for what you've been doing in your show to push for the Green New Deal and Medicare for All and student debt relief and no wars. That's the sentiment out there about in this country, and we need to continue to mobilize for that kind of future.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.